Hello, dear friends, and welcome to the Great Day Podcast. I'm your friend and host, Mayor K. Now, before I jump into this podcast, I do have to share a disclaimer that this episode may trigger some listeners, being that one of the main themes of this conversation is around suicide. It's real. It's an authentic conversation with Avermi Garari, a talented musician and composer whose daughter, Yocheved, committed suicide back in December of 2020. Avermi is one of the real ones. He's honest, he's authentic, and he doesn't hold back. This conversation is powerful. It gives me a lot of hope, and we go there. It's intense and emotional, and it's very much needed. I did want to share a Instagram post by Avermi that he shared the day after we had this conversation, which was him answering a question that I asked him during the recording. But he didn't feel like he gave the right answer, so he answered it the following day in this post. The question was, can you tell me about one of your favorite memories of you and Yocheved? And this is what Avermi replied on his Instagram post. Quote, my favorite memory of you is simply you. I should not have to think of one specific memory. Rather, your 24 years molded us, bettered us, completed us, shaped our experience, informed our views and our love, defined our family. I'm not sure how it's even possible to dissect your life and say, ah, this was the best part. Rather, your entire life, who you are, is one complete massive memory. Sure, there are specific events that we can talk about, and that has its own beauty. But overall, my favorite memory of you is that on a macro level, you were, are, an inseparable component of our lives that can never be replaced. It's not one thing, but rather, now he goes on to quote Jim Croce, quote, photographs and memories, oh, the love you gave to me, somehow it just can't be true. That's all I've left of you. End quote. Beyond that, indeed, I got nothing. End quote from Avermi. Yeah. So without further ado, let's just jump into it. Thanks for tuning into this episode with Avermi Garari. We have with us today Avermi Garari. Thank you for being here.
Thanks for inviting me.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. I'm so happy and honored, really, to share some space with you today. And I know we're going to delve into some topics that are close to my heart, and I mean, especially to yours, but on the long lines of mental health. And even though I'm not a parent, but parenting, I've come to be passionate about, just because, well, one day, God willing, I'd like to be a parent, but also knowing how much could be saved in time and energy when raising a child in a certain way, in a loving way, in an accepting way, and we'll delve into. But for those who do not know, Avermi is many things. He's a father, a husband, a son, a friend, a fabulous musician. But a big reason why I've invited Avermi onto the podcast is because his daughter, Yocheved, took her own life, and which in a very shocking way to the community, and from there I really want to start the conversation and then blossom into the other topics I just talked about.
Sure.
So would you just give a little context as to, you know, the Yocheved and just like the diagnosis around that and what she was going through?
Sure. So, as you mentioned, Yocheved took her life. This happened in December of 2020. This is after a 10-year battle with depression, eating disorder, anorexia, and self-harm. And it was a battle, and it was an illness. And she passed at the age of 24 years old after having done brilliantly academically in school and in college, and right before she was accepted for a nursing program, a psychiatric nursing program at NYU, full scholarship.
Wow.
But we got the letter of acceptance much later.
After she passed.
After she passed.
Wow.
And so This was a struggle of hers for 10 years. This was a third attempt. She was successful on a third attempt.
So you tried twice.
She tried twice beforehand, all within a space of a year.
Wow. And during that year, did you have more more hands-on eyeballs on her?
Oh, without a doubt. Even though we gave all the care we could for those 10 years, but the first attempt in November of 2019 was a real wake-up call, and things stepped up from there in terms of therapy, in terms of her going to a residential center for eating disorders in July, August of 2020, where they refed her. Refeeding is where you take someone who is severely underweight and you try to make sure that they reach a target weight, which is difficult and sometimes can be very dangerous if someone is very underweight.
Right.
And spent a lot of money on therapy and on, you know, very attentive, learned a lot of lessons and along the way. And unfortunately, the outcome on one hand was not successful. On the other hand, you know, we're in God's hands, and I guess it was the outcome that was supposed to be.
How much of your faith plays into you? I don't know if you are accepting or not accepting, but here you are talking, and yes, some time has passed, but you say it in a way of like, you know, this has happened and life is moving on. You, right before the podcast started, you're talking about marrying off a son, mazel tov on that. And
Thank you. And
like life continues, but how much does faith play into you being anchored in reality and not going absolute nuts?
Faith. You're talking about religious faith?
I don't know. Am I?
Faith in what?
You tell me. I don't know. That's great. Let's go there.
Well, there are different kinds of faith, right? There's religious faith.
Mm-hmm.
There's faith.
Keep going.
Faith in God. Then there's faith in ourselves, faith in the community, faith in our fellow man, faith in the system. So I think faith in God is a little more complex. But as far as faith in community, let's talk about that for a second, because the go-to place for anyone in my position is a complete loss of faith.
Yeah.
In how, you know, someone has taken their life, and obviously someone did something wrong. I could blame it on myself, I could blame it on teachers, I could blame it on community, I can blame it on modern society, I can blame it on social media, I can blame it on the fact that we live a very fast-paced life. But I met someone very, very wise. I think you know him as well, mutual friend. His name is Ali Nash.
Yeah.
And I really believe in many ways that he saved me and put me in the right trajectory in terms of faith in ourselves is concerned. And he explained to me at a time when I was very vulnerable, he said to me that it's not useful to blame any one person for what has happened under tragic circumstances, but rather it's more useful as a community to reflect and to consider ways, what could we have done better? What could we have done to prevent this from happening? And as you correctly said, I'm not sure if it was before you started the recording or after, what can we do preventatively so that these things don't happen when kids get older? Because I can tell you, after meeting a lot of people, it's much difficult to help someone who's 20 years old, having gone through several years of having suffered, whereas we need to think about more healthy living at a very young age.
Yeah.
To define that healthy living, I think each person has to define it for themselves. We can talk about it generally. Obviously, there are going to be differences from religion to religion, community to community. But that's where the answer lies, I believe. Faith in God. I don't think my faith in God was much different before than it is now. And Ellie also encouraged me to stay positive, meaning to say that it's very easy to go to a negative place. And I had to work on myself, because I can go to a negative place. And I had to work myself to, for the most part, I don't think I've been successful 100%, but to try to stay positive, try to be positive with other people, try to help other people, try to get by giving, which is something you do.
Maybe. Yeah.
I think you get by giving.
I get a lot,
right?
More than
you
I
get
give.
A lot, exactly.
Yeah.
So there's that. Yeah.
Wow. I appreciate that. And yeah, faith in ourselves. I mean, I find it more entwined, like faith in myself, when I think of my higher self and the person like I want to be, and like when I work from a place of love and acceptance, or just like not being bogged down by my ego or being victimized, I feel like that's God. That's like a godly level in some way. Like I'm working from my soul level. Like and right now the lines are blurred for me personally. Like God, higher self, myself, believing myself, I believe in my creator. You know, there's the opposite of the famous saying, doubting yourself is doubting your creator. And God created me.
Oh, really? Okay.
So like, if I believe in myself, I believe in my creator. I could, you know, there's a certain connection. That's how I get through the more rougher times of life. But to go back to that, I sort of went off there for a second, but, it was a 10-year journey, you said, and when you initially found like there was like some, what were some of the earlier signs that like Yocheved needed some extra support? We're talking about 14 years old now, early teens.
Yeah, 14 years old. It was kind of obvious. Well, there were different signposts along the way. At first, the eating disorder was presented itself, and we tried to get help for that. You have to understand, you know, as I've spoken to therapists myself, that for us, well, let's talk about myself. It's a learning curve, so. And I made it very clear when our story became public, and everyone said, "Oh, what a perfect father you are!" And I made it very clear to write on social media that I was not a perfect father, and there were missteps. And I wish I didn't make those missteps. But as therapists have explained to me, you know, I'm not a rocket scientist. So I don't know how to build a rocket. Same way, you know, if I'm bringing up kids, you know, I'm learning on the job. So now, eating disorder is very misunderstood, and. It took me years to kind of understand it, to learn what to do, to learn what it is, to learn what it isn't. Most importantly, to learn what not to say, to learn what to say in a supportive role. And I didn't always do the right thing. I tried, and I think I got better as time went on. But so that was the first indication. The next indication was in her senior year of high school, where. A friend of hers actually told her, "Listen, you have this eating disorder that I think, you know, you have, and your parents don't realize how bad it is. If you don't go to a school psychologist, I am."
Wow, a friend of hers in school.
A friend of hers in school, yeah. Wow. And she did go to the school psychologist, and ended up that she went to see the doctor that she had been treated for in the past. And my wife took her, and then I get a phone call from my wife saying, "We're not coming home today. We're going to hospital." And I said, "Well, what happened?" And she said, "Well, Yocheved is self-harming." I said, "What's that?"
Oh, wow. Yeah.
So that's another area of mental health which I had zero understanding of, and it took me a long time to understand it. Basically meant that she was cutting herself. And it was such a confusing time for me. You know, they went to hospital in Cornell, Westchester.
Yeah.
She had a stint over there. Unfortunately, she self-harmed for several years, I think in the last year and a half.
Without you guys knowing about it?
Well, at first we didn't know about it, and we found out then in her senior year of high school.
Right.
We continued to know. She kept it very hidden. So she wore long sleeves.
Right.
To
Which also sneeze. I mean, is that...
Or was, and that had nothing to do with sneeze.
Nothing to do with sneeze. Right.
It had nothing to do with sneeze. Modesty.
Right. So she just hid it away. I only bring that up in a way not to like stress, only to stress on it because like of a message to parents to recognize that you may know your child or think you know it, but like there's all this is happening without you guys knowing about this.
That's correct. So we didn't know. And
what were some of the questions you would have asked or like, for a parent listening in now? I'm going to jump in just, and we'll continue from there. But like, what's a way, what were some things now with your knowledge now, like, were there some hints, but you just like allowed it to like slide, like some things in her behavior? Like, did she hide it that well, or do parents sort of make it tell themselves like it's okay? Like, what would you have done differently to engage with Yocheved and to ask her what's up?
I don't know what I would have done differently. I would have been more present and more caring and more patient. I definitely didn't let it slide. I definitely recognized it for what it is. I wasn't in denial. I think a lot of parents are in denial.
Uh huh.
You mentioned faith and you mentioned sneers and religion. I didn't.
Guilty as charged.
We refused to let that play a role.
get in the way of your...
Get in the way of anything. Mm. And I think that's an important message to send to the religious community.
Shows where I'm at, you know.
don't let that get in the way. I can tell you a couple stories about that.
Yeah, well, I'd love to hear what story.
I've written about this. Let's see which one is interesting. I've spoken about this in other podcasts. She had an eating disorder. So we're looking for an eating disorder residential center. So, of course, in my mind, I'm thinking, okay, I got to send her somewhere where they're going to serve kosher food.
Right.
And I found a location in Nevada that does that. Then I was speaking to a friend of mine, Rabbi Benny Tzippel, who deals with these kinds of cases a lot. He's based in Utah. He's a shliach Chabad emissary in Utah. And he said to me, Avrami, what are you doing? Just find the best place. Who cares if it's kosher food? It's medicine. And I realized, you know what? He's right. Mm. And he said, you can speak to a rabbi, but every rabbi is going to say it's fine. And I didn't speak to a rabbi. I knew instinctively that he was correct. Was right. And the place we sent her to, look, you know, I said to them, you know, can you purchase kosher meat? So they bought kosher meat. They cooked it in a non-kosher kitchen. It's all good.
Right, that becomes number one. I know, like, I think, I don't want to misquote, but I know there was a famous Jewish psychologist, I believe, who would, like, encourage people to, let's say, go to meetings, 12-step meetings on Shabbos if they need it. Like, it's not a question. Like, if it's life and death here.
I'm not such a religious guy myself, observant, so I don't think for a second, you know, everybody, like, just goes to rabbi. Every question I have, I just knew instinctively what to do, what not to do. Most Shabbos, I carried a phone.
Yeah.
Whenever she was in the hospital or somewhere, I carried a phone.
Course.
One Friday night, she self-harmed in a way that she needed stitches. Right away, I had to grab my phone, went on Kingston Avenue in Crown Heights, found a doctor, you know, found her care, didn't wait, oh, should I ask a rabbi? You know,
right, of course.
I think
right.
A lot of people make that mistake, and it's in a way laughable but sad at the same time.
Right.
Yeah.
So to go, right, I hear that. And it runs so deep in our growing up sometimes. It sort of makes us pause, and in that pause, you're like, wait, we're talking about your child's life, a human life here. This is more important than anything else. But to go back to the, you know, you're talking about the eating disorders, and I'm in the world of, you know, getting to know recovery and addictions and I don't know too much about eating disorders, so correct me if I'm wrong, but from my understanding is, I know Gabor Mate talks about how these things are symptoms of something much deeper, right? These are just way coping mechanisms for the soul, for the person to be able to...
Absolutely.
Right, to move, to be able to survive in life. And
yeah, it's control. It's a form of control.
Yeah. So were you able to understand or get to a level where, to understand why this developed within her? Was there a discovery in that way as to, like, why she was trying to take back control or to... numb herself in this her existence?
We never quite figured it out. And it's an addiction like any other addiction.
Yeah.
And you're right that it was some kind of a coping mechanism for self-control, just like self-harm is. I'm not a mental health professional, so I don't want to say anything that, you know, some fancy therapist is going to come back later and say, yeah, he doesn't know what he's talking about, because I don't know what I'm talking about. That's the truth. I just know what I experienced. We were never able to find out the reason. Some people are going to say, you know, trauma, and people are going to attack me for this, but I think it's an overused word. We tried to ask. I sat her down one night because Dr. Rosen in Crown Heights told me that she must have suffered from some kind of trauma. And I said to her, listen, you know, if you suffer trauma at my hands, I own it, and I can't, I cannot change the past. And but we can only you know change the future. Just let me know what it is, and I'm just want to let you know I'm owning it.
Right.
And she didn't really come up with anything that's very, very significant. You know, the usual thing. You may have slapped me a couple of times when I was younger. You may have spoken to me in a way that was belligerent. And indeed, in her final letter that she sent to us, which is not public,
right,
which we received after she passed away, she talks about it. That I wish there was a trauma with a capital T that I can blame for all of this, but there just simply isn't. There's no one thing that I could blame and say that this is why I'm doing what I'm doing. Perhaps there are life expectations that didn't meet my needs, and this is what it is. And if you read her final Instagram post, which was also delayed,
yeah,
she says as much. There's no one that, you know, could have done more or She said it very beautifully, but no one could have done
it. She wrote very eloquently. I read it this morning before coming here, just to read it again. And I teared up. Yeah. It was beautifully written. And the context of like understanding, of course, when she wrote it and what happened is like, wow. Very, very intensely beautiful. Just like, and like you said, like letting go of any like guilt for anybody, like any friend or any family member to think like it's
nothing.
Like, there's nothing, you could have done.
In the letter she sent us, it was a 45-minute read. There was zero toxicity and all just beauty and warmth. And of course, she bled out, meaning she expressed her, you know, angst and her unhappiness. But to us, there was no, it was only love.
Mm. Wow. Did that help, or was there still a period of time, like you or your wife, or where you had to go through a process of like, what could I have done? Like, did you fall into that loop of what could I have changed?
Listen, we've all gone through various therapies, and that loop is unavoidable.
Yeah.
I don't think anyone who's gone through the experience that I've gone through can avoid such a loop. What could I have done? But that's where faith comes in, right?
But you say it with a smile. So what's faith?
But the question is, it could be theoretical, and how to bring it down into
practical. Right, practical. Right.
But I could say that through Eddie's wise words and my own work, I think I've worked very hard at coming to terms with the fact that we're treating it like we have to treat it, and that's also an important message. We have to treat it like a disease, a terminal disease, like any other.
Mm.
And she passed when she had to pass, like, you know, just like a cancer patient with, you know, terminal disease would pass. And we tried all we could, especially in the last year of her life. I mean, we just threw everything at it. All the love and all the care and all the removing the BS from the process.
Yeah.
And there was a lot of beauty that year. I can assign a lot of blame, and I don't wish to go there. I've been on many. I am on one private Facebook group for parents of kids that have taken their lives, and there's a lot of angst there, a lot of anger.
Mm.
And 1 week, I decided. I told my wife, I'm going to place. There's a term which you probably aren't aware of. If someone's kid passed at the age of 26, they called forever 26.
Mm.
Now, as Jews, we don't believe in that because, you know, as you know, we say Tehillim or Psalms, you know, for the year. And as the person ages, even after they've passed, we say the following Psalm, you know. So I said to my wife, I'm going to post something as positive from the Jewish standpoint of the soul and the ascension of the soul, is the religious side of me speaking. And if I get good feedback, I'm going to remain in the group. But if I don't, I'm out because I just can't handle the toxicity and it's not good for me. And it's not a Jewish group. And I posted a long post about, I researched it, about the Jewish attitude towards death, dying, the elevation of the soul, what happens after someone passes, and so on. And it's all very beautiful from the teachings of the Bava Chereba and just general sources of Judaism.
What was a little synopsis of that? If you're able to, like, sure. What was like the idea?
A while ago.
Yeah, but what was that idea
that
you shared?
That we play for that we say Tehillim or Psalms for the elevation of the soul, and that the soul, you know, is alive in a soul context, not in a body context.
Yeah.
And that's not the end. You know, as other people might think it is, it's not the end. I don't think it's the beginning, but it's definitely part of the process. And it's we believe in divine providence. Again, all I'm telling you is very theoretical, and the way I believe on a theoretical level, can I say that I practice this in my everyday life and I believe it 100% every moment of my life? No, but this is the beauty of Judaic thought. We believe in the continuation of the Jewish soul on various levels, different levels of soul.
Sure.
There's a level of soul that actually remains, according to Kabbalah, remains above the grave for a year,
mm-hmm.
Which is why actually the custom is not to visit the grave, because we don't want to disturb that manifestation of the soul.
So you shared this on the group,
on
how did they take it?
Yeah, beautifully. But, you know, beautiful. People are like amazed and astounded because it was for them a unique and a new perspective.
Yeah.
So then I remained on the group, and every now and again I just chirping.
Bring a little light to that.
You know, just try to throw a little light. It's all about light, right?
Yeah, that's it.
So,
part of it is for sure. Yeah. Wow, Remy, that's wild. So, any encouragement or to a family member that's going through? They have a child that's suffering right now and with a mental health issue. They're harming themselves, like real. Is there something that you could give some chizuk or advice on how to best, you know, maneuver within that space?
So can we separate, is your question directed at the Jewish community, the Orthodox community?
No, I mean, I don't know.
Or the general community?
Well, that's the thing. I think if we're talking about this, right, we just talked about how you could break Shabbos to go ahead and save someone's life.
Sure.
So I think it's talking to any parent that's, if you're going through something like this, it doesn't matter, right, what religion you're
right,
going through.
That's true. So the number one advice I would have is validation. You have to validate when someone is suffering and not to blow it off. And how do you do that? The way you do that is to realize that your loved one is suffering and get your own therapy. That's the number one thing you have to do. And someone explained this to me, a therapist friend of mine. When a family is going through this, that it's important for the parents or the caregivers to go to their own therapy, either to resolve their own shortcomings, their own challenges, or to get training in what to do and how to care for someone that's going through these kinds of things. Again, what to do, what not to do, what to say, what not to say, how to validate. In eating disorders, it's so easy to say the wrong thing. And I've done it. I'm guilty of it. Why don't you eat your food and then you'll be okay? And you can't say that to an eating disorder patient because it's not about eating. It's not about food. It's not about weight gain. Although there is that element to it. We can talk about social media. That plays a role.
Uh-huh. It did play a role.
It plays a very important role. And unfortunately, you know, I don't know what the success rate is. I think it has the, how do we say, the lowest mortality rate or the highest mortality rate. Eating disorder patients, most of them, you know, die young. You know, for more mental health illnesses.
Mm.
Very hard to treat. I'm not an expert. I still don't have all the answers. And I believe it's, we should know how to ask the questions as opposed to getting all the answers, because we're never going to find all the answers.
Right.
And it's important to know what questions to ask and to care and to validate and be loving and be present. And it's not easy to do. And you need to go for training.
How has your parenting shifted since this passing with your other children? Or through the process of just, you know, working with Yocheved and trying to be with her? And
well, I talk for myself when I get interviewed on these kinds of podcasts. So, but I will say that you have to understand that there's two eras over here, because I have three kids, Yocheved being one of them.
You should always be your child,
of course. And so we can talk about parenting when my children were 8 and 9 and so on, but when this happened, my kids were already adults. So I had one son who was 18, one other son who was 24. Now they're 21 and 27. So it's not so much a different. It's not so much a question of how my parenting style affected them, but it's about how I think in my mind how my parenting style should have been, and I'm sure they paid the price for, you know, parenting on my end that was not the way it was supposed to be. So now I'm just in the position where I can just tell others who are just starting out, that have young children, you know, if I'm given the opportunity, you know, what to do or what not to do. And you know, I can tell you that I mean, obviously my parenting child has to my adult children has definitely changed. I believe, I hope my kids who will be listening to this will agree. I don't know if they will.
Yeah, you know, that's my question.
Kids always love to gripe against their parents, and that's okay. And, you know, we can be the scapegoat. And I fully accept that. That's part of our job as being a parent. You'll find out one day.
Mm.
And that's okay. But I do my best. I love my kids to bits.
Yeah.
And, you know, I love Yocheved. And, you know, and that's the best I can do. You know,
So how has it shifted as adults? I'm just going back to that question.
I mean, again, they're adults, so there's a very
less hands on.
It has to be less hands on.
Yeah,
you know,
Which, by the way, is actually may seem obvious to you, but a lot of parents still hold on to them as you're even as they get older and get married, and so that's also.
Well, it has to be completely hands off. You know, did you say hands on, hands off?
I said hands on, but no, no, but the opposite, the hands opposite, off. Yeah, yeah, hands yeah. Off,
yeah. It has to be hands off. Yeah. And in fact, you know, if you're going to get religious for a second,
well, let's do it.
Is your ordinance?
It's a mix.
It's a mix.
Yeah.
So in our community, which we're both part of, do you still live in Crown Heights?
For now.
So in our community, most girls dress modestly and don't wear pants, for example. Right?
Mm.
So, I mean, in my case, again, the story is told in other forums. Instead of, you know, my daughter was not rebellious or angry in any way, but there was a time that I came to and I actually encouraged her to start wearing pants, and she did.
You encouraged her to start wearing pants?
It wasn't the reverse, and in most cases, it's always the reverse. You know, kids rebel, and they say, right. I want to wear pants, and then the parents will freak out. But in my case, and we knew that it was something that she needed, that for that body image, that would be better for her, and it was better for her. First, she didn't believe that I was, you know, offering this to her about us, you know, and it was possibly too late, you know, but it was a point that we came to and said, you know, I think you should start wearing pants, and I'm going to walk down Kingston Avenue with you, and we're going to hold our heads up high and be proud, and if anyone gives you anything, you know, I'm going to be there to defend you. No one did. Everyone showed just love and respect.
Right.
But there's, you know, for example, you know, I was talking to a family who's, now we're talking about the hands-off, who had a kid who's 20, a girl, who's wearing pants, and the mother's like, you know, you can't come into my house.
Aye.
And I told the parents, you know, you're done. You know, whatever you try to teach them happened when they were 8, 9, 10 years old.
Yeah.
That's over, you know.
Yeah.
You know, they're 20 years old. They're living their own life. Now, the only job now is connection.
Uh-huh.
Through love and kindness and acceptance. You can still say, listen, you know, there are, like in my daughter's case, you know, when she knew, and we spoke about it, when she went to family events, went to community events, she dressed in a different way. But, you know, in the community and to her own, you know, with her own friends, she dressed, you know, in a different way.
Yeah.
So, and actually this family that I spoke to, they did, you know, kind of, there was a paradigm shift for them. And as I talked to many, just, you know, just at the age of 17, 18, 19, it gets just, you know, lay off. You got to lay off, and you can be, you know.
Like, do you want a relationship with your kid or not?
If you want to, either decide, you know, either you want a relationship or not, exactly, you know.
You're right. So more on that topic, there are a lot of these, like, black and white thinking, or like, if you don't do this, don't come back to that house. Talking to that for a bit, how can you bring a little more compassion, and what kind of parenting tips would you share from your experience of how could people, we live right now, yeah, in Crown Heights, it's a ultra-Orthodox community, there's other ultra-Orthodox communities around our neighborhood, different backgrounds, and also different communities throughout the world and the states, so, which are states around the world, so, you know, think how things were 20 years ago, 40 years ago, back in Russia, how things are now in 2022, what has to change for, because there's a lot of death in the community. A lot of kids are killing themselves.
Yeah.
A lot of overdoses, and it's all symptoms.
Right.
It's all symptoms of just a lot of deep pain that kids are just don't. And I know it comes from my, I know, I'm not a professional. I just do a lot of research and have a lot of people who have been affected very closely to this. I think there's a lot of fear. A lot of parents and educators are trying to hold on and grasp, and like we're afraid to like for our values and our ideas and our way of being to die. And yet at the same time, the kids are actually dying. So, and there's this connection between parents and kids, and there's a lot of this, you know, this disconnection, dislocation between families. I'll get to my question. Where could this shift happen where people could feel safer and we can move to more love based relationships and religion or spirituality than fear and disconnection?
Well, I'm not a parenting expert.
Tell me the answer.
I'm not a parenting expert.
I'll
just say a couple of observations, and let's leave religion out of it.
Okay.
It's very important to leave religion out of
it. Leave religion. I'm fine.
And the reason is because I think religious leaders tend to make decisions on based on religious reasons, and it doesn't really serve us well. So a couple observations, and I really encourage your listeners to read two books by one author. I think you met him. You were there that night, Johan Hari.
Yeah,
you were there that night. So yes. He wrote two books. One is Lost Connections, and a second one, which I'm in the middle of right now, is called Stolen Focus.
Mm.
And you mentioned love. So what is love? Love is
baby,
connection. Hey, baby, don't hurt me. Love, all you need is love.
Yeah.
What is love?
What is love?
Connection. Mm. And Johan talks about this. So it starts very, very young, and we live in a very disconnected world because we're very connected to our electronic devices, and I don't want to blame electronics or internet for everything, but that's a big deal, and it's not about what you're exposed to. That's what the religious community wants to kind of push, all the stuff we shouldn't be seeing.
Right.
But the very fact that we're kind of glued to our devices and our, and then Johan already talks about the stolen focus, how we just can't focus. We can't think because we're still, we need that
stimulation.
That thrill The other thing is that kids are less resilient today, and parents make, my brother, who's an educator in Australia, talks about this, that it's a job of a parent to be a parent, not a friend. So when there's at the age of 7 or 8 or 9, that is an opportunity to make decisions for your children that your children will not find beautiful and acceptable. They might anger them. But that's okay at the age of 7 or 8, 9. It's not okay at the age of 20.
Mm.
So, for example, your 10-year-old comes to you and says, I want to take a week off school because I don't feel that I want to go to school. Parents says, no, you got to go to school. Then the kid will whine. Or the kid at the age of 12 will say, I want a smartphone. Or I want to watch movies, And the parent will say, no, you can't do that. And the kid will say, well, my friend does it. So the parent can either do one of two things and say, you're right, your friends do it. You can do it too. Or have the good sense to say, this is not healthy for you. I'm making this decision. You can't do this, and this is what you should be doing instead. And the kid will whine, and hopefully in years to come, thank them later. What do we replace that by? We can talk about all the no-nos, but what do we replace that with? Replace that with interaction, with connection, with going out. Again, my wife will listen to this and laugh because I've been guilty of this. Going out, spending time together, becoming closer, whether it's with your friends, with your family. You're a little bit younger than I am, a lot younger than I am. When we were kids, we went out, we got dirty, I went across the street, I played ping pong with my friend every day, we watched the Cars, we played all these games, there was no internet, there were no movies, We listened to music together on a real vinyl record and studied the jacket, got really, today it's so accessible that we take it for granted.
Yeah.
That we really kind of lived the, I remember when Thriller came out, Michael Jackson's Thriller, my friend and I, we got together in a room and we listened to the album from every single song and studied the jacket cover.
Wow.
Who would do that today? We'd skip the filler songs.
Yeah.
And just listen to them, ones that are the hits,
It seemed like more.
So we don't live in the moment. We live in fast. Keep that gratification.
Right.
So
as listening to the song, you're also doing cooking or you're watching something else. Or you're doing.
You have the ear pods. You listen.
Yeah.
We actually listen. We're really kind of in an active way. But you know what? It's very difficult, and I've taken a step back from trying to get people help at the age of 18 or 19. I still, try to help where I can, but I'm realizing that it's a thankless job and the real work has to be done at a much younger age. And parents, I can't stress this enough, go for parenting classes. My brother, who is an excellent parenting coach himself, would tell me that when he was a very young parent, every time there was a parenting course or a parenting class, he would go. He'd say, and he was a great parent, and he probably didn't need it. He would say, maybe I'll learn something. You never know.
Right.
And don't be... Don't think, I can do it. I know what to do. I'm a smart guy.
Mm.
Don't do that.
Wow. Yeah, I've been having conversations with, like you said, it depends how you count, but let's say for now, you're a little older than me, and having conversations with people in your age bracket, I'm always amazed, like you mentioned, for better, you were maybe more forced to go to therapy at some point, but I'm realizing there's people my age, everybody's going to therapy, or it seems like most are. I'm in my early 30s. I'm 32. Why am I hiding that? 32 years old. Speaking to people in their 50s, mid-50s, reaching 60, and they've never been to therapy. And I'm boggled by the fact of, how are you handling, how are you, who are you talking to? Your kids are this way, your wife, your mother, there's financial problem. How are you, where are you letting that, how are you surviving?
Well, wait a second. Please, don't conflate therapy with instruction. What I'm talking about is going to classes, learning what to do. I'm not talking about, once you're screwed over, now I got to go to therapy to mess, to clean up the mess, which is important. I'm not putting that down.
Yeah. Fair enough. I guess I was running off the thread of recognizing that you don't necessarily have all the answers. There's always something to learn.
Or something to learn.
There's always something. So that could be from an educational stance of going to a class like your brother did.
Right.
Or I'm coming from a place of hey, maybe I don't have it all under control.
Yeah.
And I could go ahead and speak to somebody in like more of a therapeutic space. I'm just commending you, your brother, those who are from an old generation that are not, you know, millennial Gen Z, where it's a little more mainstream. And right. thank God that the stigma is getting less and less to go ahead and help themselves.
You know, stigma. Can we talk about that?
Let's go.
People are going to really criticize me for this. I don't think there's...
You always preface with that. Maybe not.
I'm a big boy and I can take it.
Yeah, and you have, haven't you?
I have.
You have over the years. Come on. Remy, you got a reputation.
Yeah, it's okay. I don't know if there's a... You know, often parents call me up and they say, you know, we don't want you to talk about this with anybody else, which is fine. It's up to them.
What are they referring to?
Like, let's say someone will call me up and they have a problem with their child and want me to help, and they say, you know, or the
help,
child,
but don't do the, say that.
Or even the child, you know, the 20-year-old kid will call me up and discuss something with me, and they say, you know, this is just, I don't want anyone to know about this. I say, I'm respecting your decision, but just so you understand, I don't think that's wise.
Why?
Because I respect it. So, for example, so I don't think there's much stigma as one thinks there is. But so, for example, in my daughter's case, let's take Yocheved's case, for example.
Yeah.
It wasn't discussed until Yocheved made it public. And that happened in a day. She rolled up her sleeves, started wearing, you know, all her
scars,
her scars were there to be seen. Oof. She kind of publicized the story on Instagram and on Telegram, and then it's no longer a thing. So there's a difference between...
Wow, brave.
And the reason for that is, why is it helpful? Because there's a difference between private and secret. Things that are private. That's it, you know. Things that are secret or just something else you have to carry with you.
And the shame there is. Yeah.
But if you can discuss it in public, talk about it, and get help, and reflect and bounce it off one another, then it's just another tool that's available to you. So I encourage... Now, it is a problem, you're right, you know, where they feel that if they're going to come out, they're going to be criticized or mocked by the community and so on. You know, I was told by, for example, one of the directors, I don't know if he's CEO or one of, I don't know what his title is, but Mordechai Levavitz, who heads JQY, Jewish Queer Youth, he said to me, listen, you know, parents have to understand, it serves the needs of young religious Jews who have come out as homosexual and need that support, and, you know, it's not easy for them to come out to their parents and so on. And he says to me, listen, Avrami, he says, the parents have to decide either they want their kids to be openly gay, accept them as being openly gay, or they're going to take their lives. You know, have your pick. You know, which one
is just,
you
know, that's how it is.
That's how it is. Have your pick. And I mean, it's an extreme example, but you know, so there's what to be said, and it's not always the parents' fault. It could be the child themselves. There's what to be said about, you know, and I've actually encouraged, not always successful, I've encouraged certain young people who I've known to have come out as gay. Tell your parents, you know, tell your friends, and sometimes it happened, sometimes it hasn't happened.
Right.
But when it's happened, it's always been, you could tell that they moved up a notch, you know, in their recovery as people. Not playing as a recovery from but homosexual, but their recovery as people and their growth in life, it's always served them well when they've come out, you know.
Yeah.
And in the that can be said of any kind of thing that you're keeping a secret. I'm not, you know, if you're suffering from a, you know, depression or eating disorder.
Yeah.
If you're able to discuss it publicly, you're...
It's such a weight off one's back. It's amazing. The mental capacity, like, it's just so much lighter.
Yeah, it's lighter.
It's lighter. And that conversation that you'll have will perhaps bring you guys even closer and gives you the ability to come closer, because now that your parents can see you more as who you are and you can have a relationship. Otherwise, exactly. There's a massive wall between you two.
1,000%.
I see this not as a preacher, as someone who's gone through it. Like, I'm less religious than I once was. And for a while, I maneuvered around it. There was a lack of love and acceptance for myself because I had all this guilt and shame around it. And then with my parents, avoiding them, making excuses not to come home. But really, it was just all this like murkiness of like being uncomfortable to having this conversation, allowing my parents to know what's really going on, which Chetzi sort of already knew.
Right.
And to step into that conversation was a massive, took a lot of courage for myself, had a lot of support, had to, you know, talked it through with therapists and coaches and friends and done it. And they were so loving and caring about it. And your parents. And we're so much, we have an incredible relationship today that we would not have had if we didn't walk through this. And we're walking the path.
So I would encourage it from both ends, you know, parents can blame their kids and kids can blame their parents. And it takes one side to be courageous and start the conversation. And hopefully most of those conversations will be positive.
Right. The parents are right. You said, hey, Yocheved, why don't you go ahead and wear pants? Like, it doesn't have to necessarily come from the child to come first. You're saying also the parent could come and say, hey, I see this is
perhaps one of my prouder moments that I was able to realize that it, you know.
That's like, great.
You know, it came to me in a flash and definitely one of my prouder moments.
Yeah.
I'm proud of it.
Yeah. As you should be. Yeah.
I hope other people, that's our challenge in the religious community, not to conflate religion observance. But guess what? I mean, let's be clear. The grass is not greener on the other side. In other communities, they have their own set of challenges that we don't have. I don't know if we can go into them. Doesn't matter.
Mm.
But every community, secular, not secular, Muslim, Jewish, Christian, everyone has their own sets of challenges that they have to endure and be victorious over.
Yeah, totally. To like bring things on a, I'm curious to know, going back to Yocheved's page for a second, there was her last post with the photo of the sun shining on her. And then the previous two are her singing with you, which are, of course, after I needed a little pick-me-up, so I went to watch those, and those are beautiful. I mean, and what I'm referring to, for those who are listening and don't know, is home videos of Remy and Yocheved.
Right.
She's singing, you playing, and
right.
And it was beautiful, like a father and daughter moment.
Sure.
How did that happen often? Was that like a new way of bonding that came later on?
It happened, but that was a very strange thing, those two videos. And thank you for bringing it up.
Mm.
Because she never allowed me to photograph her and put her on social media. She never allowed me to video us and put her on social media. And I feel it, and my wife took video of those, you know, those two times we played and sang together, and she asked me, "Dad, you mind if I put this on social media?"
She
asked me.
Yeah.
I said, "Hell yeah!" And I'm thinking, why would she be allowing this to happen? We realized later that this is her gift to us. This is how she wanted us to remember her by, because she had her completing suicide was a decision that she had come to very early, very well thought out. It was not impulsive; it was very planned. She knew exactly what she was doing. She wrote about it. She had a diary day by day.
Oh, wow.
And I really feel, you know, came back now, like through, you know, through an imperfect growing up, which had its moments, its great moments and its sad moments, that she loved me and she knew I loved her. And she just wanted me to have this gift. This is how we're going to remember each other by, you know, we're just playing together and sharing our love of music. Which I'm thankful for, and those are beautiful moments. So
you could tell I encourage those who are listening to go ahead and to have it. It seems like you're leaving that up to that her page.
It's not up to me, because the way social media works is that it's in what are they called, the memory or something.
Okay.
I have no control over her Instagram page.
Who does?
Instagram. Yeah, we can talk about that.
That's part two.
Part two. Facebook, I have control because I was designated what they call
guardian.
You know, if you could actually put on Facebook, if you pass away, someone has guardianship over your page.
Uh huh.
So I was designated, but I have limited control. I can choose who, you know, friends are, and so on. I have very limited control. But those pages are up. Also, there's also in memory of, you know, you know, I don't own those pages.
Right.
But there's a lot of beautiful things.
There are beautiful up there. Yeah. So just go back. I encourage us to watch. Those are beautiful moments that are on her Instagram page. And bring this conversation to land this plane, I would love to just ask you talk about two things. One of which is there a memory? I mean, those are two beautiful videos that we just talked about. But is there like a memory of Yocheved that comes to mind? Doesn't have to be the one, but just something that you want to share about you and her, and then I want to just briefly talk about also the Yocheved Gerari Kindness Award, which was made in her memory.
You.
Yeah.
Memory of me and her. There's so many. I don't know where one would begin. She loved dogs.
Mm-hmm.
And when she, we didn't have a dog. We were looking into getting a dog, and because of COVID, it was difficult to get the one we wanted.
What are you guys going to go for?
don't know what it's called. It's very fancy, like a $5,000 dog. It's like a sort of a doodle.
Golden doodle?
I don't know. Golden. I forgot what it's called.
Poodle? Okay.
I don't know. Some kind of poodle mix. I don't know what it is, but it's a gorgeous dog. And it's one of those beautiful moments where when she was away in the Center for Change in Utah, I would send her a picture of a unique dog every single day, a little note. I love you. I still have those emails. And she would write me back. And that exchange is very meaningful.
That's beautiful.
You know, we shared a lot of love of music. We shared a love of quirkiness. We shared a love of the dark side.
Oh yeah,
you know, that's for sure.
Which, this the human condition.
You know, talking about suicide in a very real way, and talking about depression in a real way, and making fun of death, and and so on, and telling her half serious that if you do it, I'm gone 3 days later.
Yeah,
Very very close before she actually took her life.
Wow.
So we shared that, and that's my biggest, and that's the hole in my heart, because I love my sons to bits. We had that dark connection, I don't know if that could be replaced.
You're able to go there, right?
I mean, I'm actually happy that my other kids are not that dark, Right. It's a good thing. It's not I'm not proud of my darkness,
Yeah, sure, but that's a unique bond to have, to be able to go there, to show that part of yourself and connect on that side.
Yeah.
So tell me, I know there's, Yocheved was a very kind person.
Right.
And I would like, maybe you could share a story about that character trait about her. There's something that's going on in her memory called the Yocheved Gerari Kindness Award.
Sure.
And I had the privilege of being involved with that previous years. It's still going on, and it's only growing every single year. And in short, it's awesome. It's really able to go ahead, and people are able to vote, send in stories about people's kindness, whether it's three categories. You're an educator, a teacher, a classmate, and a friend. And the different monetary awards, but also you just go to the website, which I believe is
kindnessaward.com.
There it is, kindnessaward.com. We'll have links in the show notes. And you're able to go ahead and read just beautiful stories about Yocheved, also beautiful stories about people, the kindness going around the world, and also vote on the ongoing award competition.
Sure.
So, can you give me some context as how that became reality?
Well, it became when I got a call from Elie Nash.
And, the legend.
The legend, right?
Yeah. Love that man.
I love that man as well. I call him my mashpia.
Yeah.
Which is, the guy that's like my life coach.
Sure, he's ditto.
I've learned a lot from him.
Yeah.
And he's the one who kind of said to me, because he was hearing anger in my voice and the way I was going down that road. And he said, let's go pause. I encourage you to kind of avoid the anger. Let's go positive. I'm going to put my money where my mouth is. I think it actually came, a partner of his, Joe Weingarten, and his wife came to him with this idea. He said, you've got to, get on a Remy Gray's page. And I think it's between the two of them, they are sponsoring this kindness award. It started with them. And it's in our second year. We're awarding kindness, and we're spreading the idea that encouraging teachers and friends that, it's good to go to school and learn 8 hours a day, but the memories that people remember the most and the most impactful are those kind memories. During Shiva, a 7-day period of mourning, a young lady came to us and told us, at the time she was 19, but told us when she was 4 years old, she went to a school that Yocheved went to, and she got thrown out of her kindergarten class for having stolen a can of Sprite from a classmate of hers. Wow. And she was outside her classroom door, bawling eyes out, and along the hallway came Yocheved, who was 9 at the time, so years older than her, and sat with her and comforted her. And this girl is now much older.
4 years old.
Years old. So the girl's 4, Yocheved's 9.
Yeah.
And they spoke with one another, and she remembers this, many, many years later, what an impact that had. And there are many of these kinds of stories, that can go on and on. But that, how important that is. Not to say the other stuff is not important, academics and all that. But the teachers have to be kind, and the teachers have to know. Again, I wish the teachers, there'd be more training for teachers and what to say to kids and how to talk with kids and how to be a good role model.
How to encourage them.
Encourage them.
Yeah. Support them, sure.
What's more important, what's less important. Can't say enough about that topic.
Yeah, for sure. And so I urge yeah, I urge everybody to go check out kindnessaward.com to learn more about your Cheved, also to see about the ongoing award competition. It's really, really special. I mean, I'm all about it. There's so many award programs for so many like stupider materialistic things out there.
Right. Sure.
Love that we're elevating that into what something meaningful and positive and awarding kindness. We don't do it obviously for the awards, but love that.
Yep.
So check that out. Avrami, are there any last thoughts, ideas, concerning the things we talked about or not that you want to share?
You know, I don't have much else to share except to say, you know, be aware, parents be aware, children be aware, be kind to one another, as Ellen would say. I never show. I don't know if she, does she still do that? I don't know. I have no idea if she does the show. You know, and people can reach out to me if they want to.
How can they find
critique you? This? You know, I'm on Instagram at Agurari, Gourarie. I'm fairly easy to find. Facebook and so on. I'm always up for meaningful discussion, and where I could help, I will help. And, you know, there's so much we can do and so much we can. And by the way, much has been done. There's been a lot of, we have to recognize that a lot has been done, especially in our community with mental health awareness. And people are talking about it. We're open about it. We talk about our therapy. We talk about our struggles. So I like that.
Yeah.
There's so much more we can do. And rock on.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
Thanks for hosting me. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much for tuning into this podcast episode with Avrami Gurari. Avrami, thank you so much. Thank you. Thank you for coming on and for sharing all that you have. May Hashem continue to bless you and your wife and your family with comfort and blessings and lots of love. And may all those who are suffering out there, please, please, please know that you're not alone. Reach out to someone. In the show notes, we will have phone numbers for support. And I just send my love and blessings to you all. Have a great day.